Cybersecurity, free trade and the Queen's resignation. They're the main topics for discussion at this year's Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in London. As well as the 53 leaders of the Commonwealth nations, there'll also be about 5,000 participants from government, business and civil society. One of them is Lisa McCauley, the CEO of the Global Trade Professionals Alliance. Welcome to RN Drive.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your organisation and why you're attending the summit.
So the Global Trade Professionals Alliance is a fairly new organisation, a global trade ecosystem that has been set up to advance the engagement of businesses, trade organisations and professionals engaged in global trade across the world.
What were some of the recommendations put forward in the inquiry?
Theresa May announced at the opening of the Commonwealth Business Forum that a couple of the recommendations that the committee that I sat on for the all-parliamentary Commonwealth out of trade inquiry that went on for about 6 months, a couple of our key recommendations were taken up and were actually announced yesterday. One of those was £7 million towards the She Trades initiative run by the International Trade Centre, which will allow Commonwealth-wide support to boost businesses owned by women in countries where being a female can be a professional barrier. There was also two other announcements that we were advocating for. One of those was around the WTO trade facilitation agreement, and in particular, how the Commonwealth can play an important role in reducing the costs and risks of trade and investment across developing countries within the Commonwealth. But also, when it comes to looking at barriers in trade, and one of the areas we particularly focused in on, I was really pleased to see that a new fund has been set up called the Commonwealth Standards Network, which has been established to create a common language for goods and services to boost trade.
So what kind of opportunities will you have in influencing the decision-making process here?
So a part of what I do at the Global Trade Professionals Alliance is we do engage in a lot with like-minded organisations to support an advanced trade policy that benefits SMEs. And particularly, a couple of the case studies that we've put forward in this inquiry relate to some of the Australian government's funding into the Pacific. One of those is where the GTPA is going into six countries in Southeast Asia to help provide the in-market support to advance SMEs.
What is the most important thing to come out of this CHOGM summit?
I think Australia and other Commonwealth countries can be an important voice on advocating and supporting the importance of free trade, fair trade, and maintaining trade-based rules. And I think that that will be one of the most important things that come out. But also, I think it's incredibly important that the Commonwealth can take a leadership role in shifting the nature and tone for aid for trade and trading out of poverty. And I think that that would be a great outcome between the Commonwealth countries to commit to.
Why is it important that the Commonwealth get behind these trade agreements?
Well, in terms of trade agreements, I think, I mean, Australia in itself, we've led the way, really, in terms of advocating and supporting for the Trans-Pacific Partnership to get that across the line. I don't think anyone is recommending that there would be a free trade agreement across the Commonwealth, and I certainly am not advocating for that. But I do think that there is shared history and commonality between the Commonwealth countries, of which there are various mechanisms which can promote trade and investment ties between the Commonwealth countries without a free trade agreement. I also think that it is important to focus on how there are a large number of countries, I mean, 53 countries, but a large number of those are countries that have been left behind. And I think there are countries within the Commonwealth that can help to support those countries.
How do you imagine this will end? Because, of course, in the Brexit context, the whole free trade world is changing quite dramatically. What is the forward planning around that?
Well, I think that the Australian government is obviously over here to strengthen ties between Australia and the UK. but also it will be over here to look at strengthening ties with the EU. And Australia has to pursue both opportunities for Australian business. And that's the most important thing that Australia can get out of this in terms of free trade and a free trade agreement with the EU, but also strengthening our relationships with the UK as they're going through the Brexit process.
Lisa, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Lisa McCauley is the CEO of the Global Trade Professionals Alliance. This is RN Drive. If the head of our Commonwealth, Queen Elizabeth, stepped down, who would succeed her? Prince Charles, I hear you all yell at your radios. Well, turns out it's not that simple. And it's caused a bit of a family fight at the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting. Professor Anne Toomey is a constitutional law expert. Welcome to RN Drive.
Hello, Patricia.
Okay, so this is about whether Prince Charles becomes king, is it, or whether he becomes head of the Commonwealth. What's the difference here?
Okay, well, Charles will, by virtue of law, become king of 16 of the members of the Commonwealth, including Australia, when the Queen dies. And that happens automatically as a consequence of various laws. The position of head of the Commonwealth is different. It's a symbolic role, but it is a role that oversees a Commonwealth which has a majority of nations within it that are actually republics. So it's quite a different organisation from it was at the time that the Queen became head of it. It's not a hereditary position, so it's a position that's chosen by the Commonwealth countries, and it's chosen by way of consensus. The obvious person, of course, will be Prince Charles when the Queen dies, but understandably, the Queen would prefer to secure that choice in advance so that Charles doesn't face the ignominy on becoming king of all of a sudden being thrown out by the Commonwealth and not being its head.
So why is the answer to this question unclear right now? I mean, how does this whole decision-making process happen?
Well, that's the bizarre thing, that the Commonwealth tends to work by what they describe as consensus rather than a formal voting majority system. And the difficulty, of course, will be whether or not there is somebody else who would secure the support, you know, generally across the Commonwealth. So there's sort of two camps. There's one camp that says we should just keep it with the monarchy because of history. And the other camp is that the Commonwealth has grown beyond its association with monarchy. It's now a post-colonial organisation, and because the majority of the countries in the Commonwealth are democratically elected heads of state because they're republics, then it would be appropriate for a democratically chosen leader to be the new head. The difficulty, is, of course, is always finding someone who has that general acceptance across a group of very disparate countries, and that will be the hard thing if they seriously want to move away from Prince Charles.
Well, yeah, British Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn is calling for a democratic vote on the issue. How significant a move would that be?
I think it would be quite interesting. The Commonwealth, as I say, tends not to like the idea of voting. It tries to achieve things by just sort of general agreement and backdoor, backroom chats and those sorts of things, because it's a group of generally chaps who tend to have a similar point of view. So making it a democratic organisation of that kind would be interesting. Of course, the other context in which this now sits is Britain's relationship with the Commonwealth is becoming different because of Brexit. Britain's now looking at the Commonwealth as a potential substitute trade organisation because it's a trading bloc that covers a large area. And if you include, you know, countries like India and the like, then it has potentially huge trading opportunities involved in it as well. So there's a bit of tension between, on the one hand, this issue about the head of the Commonwealth, on the other hand, Britain's role in trying to get the Commonwealth in as a new trade block.
So how much support would there be? You say usually, you know, there's this consensus, you don't do it by a democratic vote, but do you think there'd be much support for that?
Well, the bigger members of the Commonwealth, like, you know, Australia and the United Kingdom, are in favour of Prince Charles taking on the position of head of the Commonwealth. But it's possible that some of the other members of the Commonwealth that have, like India and other jurisdictions that have long had a Republican system, might well campaign for somebody else to the position. So I think it's a matter of waiting and seeing. But again, I suspect we won't hear very much out of Windsor Castle, where these sorts of things are discussed, because for the most part, all this is dealt with in confidence. So we only get to hear the outcome, not the negotiations.
And does the royal family actively lobby on behalf of the prince with Commonwealth nations?
Oh, I think it definitely is. Buckingham Palace is definitely doing quite a lot of lobbying. As you can imagine, it would not be a good look for the beginning of Prince Charles's reign as King of Australia and the United Kingdom if one of the first things that happened was that he lost the headship of the Commonwealth. So there's a lot of pressure being applied, I imagine, at the moment.
So tell me about the Australian government's role in all of this. Of course, we're being lobbied, but we have a history here. I think even Prime Minister Gillard made some kind of guarantee. Is that right?
That's right. I understand that Prime Minister Gillard was happy to support Prince Charles being head of the Commonwealth, and I understand that Prime Minister Turnbull has taken the same position. So that's both Labor and Liberal and two Republicans, both of whom are happy with Prince Charles continuing on the position. So from Australia's point of view, that's the side our politicians have lined up on. It's, of course, you know, one of the problems with being one of the larger, longer-serving members of the Commonwealth is that sometimes presents resentment to get from other parts of the Commonwealth as well. So one suspects that, you know, countries in the Caribbean and the South Pacific and those sort of places not so interested in being ruled by Britain or by Australia. So maybe our vote doesn't count for as much.
Thank you so much for coming on and explaining it.
You're very welcome.
Professor Anne Toomey is a constitutional law expert. This is RN Drive.